You're in Kansas City, right?
Yep.
Well, close to John Brown country, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that was one of the reasons why I really wanted to read the book.
Oh, it's great.
The most obvious question is, what drew you to this subject matter, and why did you decide to write this book about John Brown?
I lived in Virginia for 13 years, actually just sort of over the mountains from Harper's Ferry. It was nearby, and I've always been a Civil War nerd, so the story wasn't new to me. But I guess what surprised me was that when I began researching it, I realized there was just so much that I didn't know, and that I therefore assumed other Americans didn't know either. So I really wanted to plunge into the story itself of what happened at Harper's Ferry and everything that went into it, but also to use it as a window to look at the beginning of the Civil War. I think, like a lot of Civil War nerds, I've always tended to focus rather narrowly on the 1861 to 65 period, the great battles and leaders. And I don't think we step back often enough and say, you know, how is it that Americans came to slaughter each other by the hundreds of thousands in the first place? And for me, John Brown and Harper's Ferry in particular is a way of looking at that question.
Right. And in the book, you call the raid on Harper's Ferry a dress rehearsal for secession and a dress rehearsal for the Civil War. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It's almost a casting call for many of the figures who become famous in the Civil War. On the Southern side, you have Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, John Wilkes Booth, Jefferson Davis, and others who are embroiled in this drama. On the other side, you have Abraham Lincoln, Northern abolitionists, etc. So it's almost a warm-up act on a small scale, this confrontation over slavery and between North and South, that in my view is in many ways a preview of what's going to happen 18 months later when the Civil War, you know, breaks out in earnest.
Mm-hmm. Another one of the things I found really interesting is that you called the raid on Harper's Ferry one of the first breaking news stories in the nation. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Harper's Ferry happens at an interesting moment in the history of American communications. The telegraph is a relatively new invention, and largely as a result of it, newspapers and wire services are expanding rapidly in this period. And when the raid on Harper's Ferry occurs, journalists rush to the scene and are able to file dispatches, almost instantaneously, thanks to the telegraph, to a national audience. And after the raid itself, you have a trial and an imprisonment of Brown and his men that goes on for weeks. So it's first a breaking news story, but also one that sort of captivates the nation for an extended period in almost a modern, familiar way. And that really hadn't happened much before then.
Mm-hmm. To back up a little bit, can you talk about John Brown's childhood and how it shaped him?
Yeah, John Brown, in a sense, had a classically American background for a man of that era. He's born to a modest farm family, moves as a young child to what was then the frontier in Ohio. Is educated at a log schoolhouse, goes to work young, has a strict Calvinist upbringing, and in all those senses, not dissimilar from many other Americans of the time, including Abraham Lincoln. I think where his upbringing is distinctive is first his father was a what we would call today, I guess, a progressive man. He cared about slaves. He cared about Native Americans. So he grew up in this household that had a commitment to social justice. And he also endured really repeated tragedies. His mother dies in childbirth when he's very young. Some of his siblings die. He marries young, and his first wife dies in childbirth. So he endured a great deal of personal tragedy that I think shaped him as well.
Mm-hmm. And you point out in the book that when he was young, he, you know, identified himself as a pacifist. How did he get from being a young pacifist to where he eventually ended up?
Mm-hmm. Well, John Brown's father was a pacifist, as were most early abolitionists. William Lloyd Garrison, who's really the founder of organized abolitionism in America, was a devout pacifist. So that was the philosophical world that Brown was exposed to. But I think temperamentally, he was never really a pacifist. He's the sort of guy who always wanted to punch back. He was not a turn-the-other-cheek sort of character. So I think part of it is temperamental. We're all wired differently. But I think also he sees what's happening, and this rage in him builds at not only the expansion of slavery and the strength of slavery politically and economically, but the inability of those on the other side to effectively fight back. And I think he despairs of peaceful means and feels that slavery is a state of war and must be met in kind.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was really interesting how he was a murderer. You know, there's no way you can really get around that. But he also kind of had the personality where he could rub shoulders with all kinds of people. And you talk about when he was out he was actually out on the road kind of fundraising, and he would be mingling with these, you know, upper crust New England types.
Yeah, I wish I could meet John Brown, because as much as you read about him, it's clear that he had a certain charisma, what one Boston hostess called moral magnetism. He had this way of stirring people's conscience and drawing them to his cause. He had a quite electric presence. And, you know, he never flinched. He was one of these people who was just absolutely committed to his cause. And I think that had a powerful impact on people who shared, you know, his views broadly that slavery must be, opposed in the strongest possible way. And he brought this kind of fire to it that I think was striking, obviously, to those he came in contact with.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about the actual raid, so it wasn't very well organized. There were a lot of mistakes, and, you know, right from the beginning, it was a little messed up. Do you think that he knew that this was almost a suicide mission?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is really the big question that I try and unravel in the book, because we can't know the answer for sure. Brown gave different versions to different people about what he intended. So we have to look at his actions and his writing and words and sort of come to the best judgment we can. He was not, in my view, a clear-headed strategist or military thinker. He was really a revolutionary. His strength was his his moral commitment and his willingness to die in this cause. But he wasn't the most effective planner and military leader. My own belief is that he hoped this rather unlikely scheme of his would succeed, and that somehow seizing this federal armory would cause slaves to come to his side, and he would lead this sort of rolling rebellion against slavery, but I think he was also prepared for its failure, that if he didn't succeed, he would die a martyr in Harper's Ferry and bring on the great conflict that he felt was necessary to overthrow slavery. And in that sense, he essentially succeeded.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure you had to do research in a lot of different places and in parts of the country to write the book. How did you have different reactions in different parts of the country, and how deeply does this story still affect people, mm-hmm. or the legacy of it?
Yeah, well, there are definitely regional differences. I mean, not surprisingly, people are much more aware of John Brown in and around Harper's Ferry, in parts of Ohio and upstate New York, where he lived for much of his life, but more than any place, really, in Kansas. Mm-hmm. And as someone bred on the East Coast, I'd been to Kansas, but I wasn't aware of how deep those memories go, you know, right back to the 1850s when, you know, folks in Missouri and folks in Kansas were, you know, going head to head over this issue. And so I found Kansas, more than any place, I would say, is where memory of and debate over John Brown is strongest.
Mm-hmm. And did you find it a little strange that he's viewed as a hero in some places? I mean, there's a mural of him on the Kansas Capitol building, you know, inside. Is that a little strange, do you think?
That mural is very interesting because it also makes him look a bit crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, Brown has a rifle in one hand and a Bible in the other. It's the sort of stereotypical portrayal of Brown as this, mad, violent, you know, Old Testament prophet. So I don't think it's, while some in Kansas may make a hero of him, I think it's a little more complicated than that. I think he's seen as a formative figure in the early history of Kansas, but I don't know that everyone thinks of him as a hero.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, and I had always thought that this was true, but towards the end of the book you talk about one of the legends is that on his way to be hanged, he kisses a black baby on the way up. Mm-hmm. But you found out that never happened.
Yeah, there are, you know, many myths about John Brown, and one that was fostered by his admirers in the North was that as he stepped out of the jail in Virginia on his way to the gallows, that he was greeted by a slave woman who held up her child, and John Brown kissed this child. This was reported by, or not reported, this was written by a New York reporter who wasn't even present at the scene. But it sort of fit the image that some Northerners had fashioned of Brown as this holy martyr, and there was artwork in particular that sprang up that perpetuated this myth. But if you read the accounts, he was closely guarded. No one was allowed near him other than soldiers. This simply didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've been asked this question before, but how do you think he would be viewed if he was somebody who did the things he did today? Would he be looked at as a fanatic or, you know, somebody who was starting some new kind of revolution?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we have to be careful with the modern analogies. Mm-hmm. You know, America in 1859 was a very different place than it is today. And, you know, the issue at stake, slavery, really doesn't have a clear modern parallel. Americans today would recognize that Brown was on the right side of history in recognizing that this was the great, you know, sin of the American nation, not just in the South. The whole country was entangled in slavery. But I think people today, as then, would be very uncomfortable with his tactics, with his use of violence, and with his absolutism. And this is why I find Brown so fascinating. There is no easy way to feel about this man. Many writers have wanted to kind of put him in a pigeonhole as either a monster and a madman, or as a martyr and a hero. And I think it's just not that simple. He, like all of us, he's much more complex than that. And there are aspects of his character that many of us would find admirable, and others that horrify us.
I thought the encounter he had with Frederick Douglass, the last encounter he had with him, was really interesting. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. One of the things that's unusual about Brown is that while there are many Americans of this day who oppose slavery, and some, like Brown, who want to overthrow it, he's unusual in really not only seeking black racial equality, but really, living his own beliefs. He really treated blacks as equals. He lived with them. They stayed at his home. And he courted the support of people like Frederick Douglass, the great black abolitionist of his day. And Douglass is quite entranced by Brown. But as the raid approaches and Brown unfolds his plan and this secret meeting he has with Douglass at a quarry in Pennsylvania, Douglass, who is perhaps a more hard-headed man, recognizes that this plan is likely to end in the death of Brown and his accomplices, and tells Brown that, and realizes that he himself cannot join Brown despite the pleading of this man, who at that point has really become his friend. And Douglass is very forthright about it. He says he simply didn't have the courage to go through with this mission. So I think it's a very revealing moment of both men.
Yeah. After I read this, John Brown is obviously the big story, but I thought the most tragic figure in the book was maybe Annie Brown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a way I'm glad you say that, because while Brown is certainly the protagonist of this story, one of the things I wanted to do was bring in the many other characters. Brown was not some sort of lone gunman. He was part of a full-blown conspiracy. And in some ways, the other people involved in this story are a little more approachable than he is. He's a quite fierce figure. And, one of my favorites is Annie Brown, his daughter. I sort of, in the course of my research, developed a bit of a crush on her. She's this remarkable teenager, provincial teenager from upstate New York, who joins her father at his hideout near Harper's Ferry. And conceals these guerrilla fighters and apparently takes one of them as her first lover. It's really an incredible story. And unlike many of the other characters, she lives a very long time. And she becomes, in a sense, the last chronicler of this event. She outlives them and later in her life begins writing very frank and colorful letters about what happened in that period. And so I really find her one of the most, perhaps the most interesting single figure in this story.
Right. So my last question is, what are some future projects you would like to do, and are you working on anything right now that you would want to talk about?
Yeah, I haven't selected enough the next book project. Books are a long-term commitment. I feel you need to be sure you're passionate about it before you take the plunge. So I've been doing some magazine writing and other things while I read and chew on it. I have become, as a result of this book, I would say, more interested in the pre-Civil War period. Again, we give so much attention to the Civil War itself, And I think the 1830s, 40s, and 50s, by comparison, are a bit neglected. The Civil War is really the result of a decades-long process, and I've become, I guess, more drawn to that antebellum period.
Well, that's the last one I have for you. So thanks a lot for taking the time
sure.
to talk.
No problem. And I hope to be out your way. I may be speaking in Lawrence in early April. So look
cool.
forward to being out your way again.
Yeah, I'll definitely go check it out.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks.
Ciao.